The Final Furlong podcast is brought to you in association with attheraces.com, the ultimate resource for racing fans.
Coming to you earlier than advertised because there's a huge day's racing on Good Friday in the UK, and it's all live on Sky Sports Racing All-Weather Championships Day. And to look at it, I'm Emmett Kennedy and Mr. Kevin Blake from At The Races.
Hello!
Who will be writing a blog on Monday all about... No, it won't be Monday. It won't be Monday. Let's be factually accurate about this now. It'll be Tuesday because it's Easter Monday. And it will be all about the great...
Did you think I don't work in bank holidays?
Cough on to yourself, Blake. At least get
it's the racing. Bank holidays means more work.
At least get quadruple time. He'll be writing all about the greatest sprinter that ever lived, George Bone. Oh, yes. George, to be crowned champion and protector of all the realms this Friday. We will find out a little bit more about that as Kevin will be there to cheer him on. Also, a man who will be there will be Sky Sports senior racing analyst, which means he starts every punditry. It also means that he can overrule anything that Kevin says. It's the senior analyst for the Final Furlong podcast as well, Sky Sports Racing's Jamie Lynch.
I love you like I never loved before. Did you see Alan Partridge, the Martin Brennan on Alan Partridge?
No.
No.
Was this the new one?
I did. The Irish guy. Yeah.
The reason I'm slightly bringing that up is that anyone who has been aware of Alan Partridge's latest work will be well-versed in the fact that there is a guy who's at a touchscreen. It doesn't always go well, and he sometimes resorts to a northern accent. So it's just a little too close to the bone for me to... But anyone who's mildly aware of my work will be able to identify very much with that. We're going to talk about the Linkfield All-Weather Championships.
Yeah.
But this is the week of the Craven. And Kevin Blake will remember many years ago when he went through the revolving door that is Time Form.
Oh, yes.
He and I once spent a week together taking in the Newmarket Craven meeting and then on to the Greenham at Newbury. Is that true, Mr. Blake?
We saw some good horses too.
We saw some good horses, but we saw some better activities in terms of the breakfast story, which I'm about to tell now.
So oh, yes.
I was hoping to save this for the autobiography, but seen as there is a cap on one end of the telescope in my career, I'm going to get out in order now. So, Kevin, at Newmarket, Time Form were paying, so we have bunk beds. We didn't. We stopped in a lovely sort of country house hotel, the Grange, in Newmarket, and we met for breakfast the next morning in the lovely dining area. Now, the lady came up to take our order, and Kevin, having scanned the menu, said that through gritted teeth, I'll have the full English breakfast, which was fine. And then the waitress asked a supplementary question to Kevin, which was, and how would you like your eggs? Of course, do you want them scrambled, fried, boiled, poached? And Kevin, an Irishman to his boots, do you know what his reply was when the waitress asked?
I don't remember this.
I don't know this story, so I have no clue.
His reply to the question, how do you like your eggs, with a panicked face, was, runny? Sky Sports Racing, Final Podcast, Kevin Blake, runny? That's the one.
I don't recall that. It sounds likely, though. It's true, though. I do like your onion.
Did you have little toasty soldiers as well to dip in them, Kevin? Did you?
I didn't see them. I left the dining room immediately.
Oh, you didn't know him. You just happened to be sitting there. This Irish guy sat down beside you and you're like, I don't know this person. And I think we have a new sweeper for the podcast. I'm pretty certain that we've got a new Final Furlong podcast sweeper. Right.
I think Lynchy had enough of Kevin Blake in his life after that week, I think.
Yeah, how often do you hang out together now, guys?
Very rarely. After that incident, very rarely.
It's never been the same.
Between the bunk beds and the runny egg, sort of turned our back on each other and gone our separate ways. But we're together for a look at Linkfield and the All Weather Podcast, and I'm broadcasting live from the very belly of the Sky complex, not just the Sky Racing or the Sky Sports complex, but the Sky complex. And as Kevin knows, because he's been here, it's a very environmental area. So, you know, you've got your vessels, there's no paper, no plastics around. And despite that, every single car in the car parks does about a mile to a swimming pool full of petrol. So not quite environmentally friendly.
Well, Kevin, yeah. if Kevin did drive over there, to be fair, your car wouldn't exactly be economically. It's fast and it's bloody nice. It's an Audi A5. And Audi, if you'd like to sponsor the podcast, we are available for negotiations and discussions. But I'm sure that that's, you know, it's Sky. Like, it's going to be a car park filled with that. It's going to be very few Priuses, really, isn't there?
And then I drive my Skoda and it's like a blackened tooth and a white mouthful.
Oh, God. Well, you're on the Sky gravy train now, so all of that's about to change.
The Sky money hasn't kicked in yet. I'm still on the time.
So before we get stuck into the action on Sky Sports Racing, we should probably talk about how the track is riding. As we are recording, controversial times in the all-weather industry, Kevin Blake, because I've seen jockeys walk the track not once but twice at Dundalk. I'm not sure if racing is continuing or not. So let's talk about the tactics at Lingfield. I'm going to give you first go at it because Lynchy will have the first go at every race. So tactics-wise, how are you expecting Lingfield to ride and what are you expecting? What will be the best tactics on the day for the jockeys to be implementing over the various different distances?
Just in general, the all-weather track at Lingfield is tricky. It's probably the one of all the all-weather tracks in Britain and Ireland. It's probably the one where tactics are of the most importance. There's ups and there's downs, the undulations that you just don't get on most all-weather tracks. And the straight can be short enough. As we'll talk about, you know, some of those starts, you know, the 6 furlong start stands out. The bend comes up very quick, so draw is a big factor. And the surface is an interesting one because at the most recent meeting on the all-weather there, which was last Wednesday, Timeform concluded that it was riding slow. And the forecast for the coming days is good and warm. And the general gist of these things is that as the weather gets warmer, all-weather tracks tend to ride a bit deeper as the wax in the surface breaks down a little bit. So would that be a fair assumption, Lynchy, that it's probably going to ride in the slow side again come Friday?
Yeah, I think that's right, Kev. And it is an unusual state of affairs for Lingfield to return a slow surface. We often see it at Kempton and particularly at Chelmsford, but less frequently at Lingfield. And with the timescale involved and the weather involved, we are going to have a slower surface, certainly than we used to on finals day. Having said that, speed is still at a premium given the topography, configuration of the track. Certainly those horses who can go on the bridle the longest tend to win out at Lingfield. And we often talk about course specialists for horses, but it is a course specialist for jockeys as well. And how many times have we seen Adam Kirby with that Kirby kick on the run to the home turn just win a race at that point?
He's been a deadly weapon around that track, to be fair. And it's going to be intriguing because we're going from 2 miles to 7 furlongs to 6 furlongs. So we're starting off with the marathon distance. Kevin mentioned the stalls position. So where would you like to be drawn over the various key distances, Lynchy?
Obviously, this is the case with any turning track, that the shorter the distance, the more importance of a low draw. And because it is a sharp track and a speed-favouring track, when you come to 6 furlongs, which is a little chute that then joins onto the main track, that especially, you need to get towards that inside. Having said that, the results themselves on Good Friday, only one winner of the sprint and only one winner of the three-year-old race, likewise over 6 furlongs, has been from an inside draw. And sometimes on this big day, the competition becomes over-egged and the jockeys become a bit hot-headed, and it can play into those who bide their time a bit more. So as a basic rule, yes, it's the basic rule of thumb with any turning track, in that the shorter the distance, the increased importance of the draw. But it's not the be-all and end-all. And as always, jockeyship is the key factor. And because it's Good Friday, we've got the big jockeys rolling out.
Absolutely. David Nolan, you've got a very low draw on George Bowen. Use it, son. Use it. Speaking of big jockeys, Christophe Soumillon, the Belgian superstar, makes his way over to Lingfield. I think this is his first time to Lingfield, is it? First, certainly for all the championships day. I'm going to put it out there. I'm going to stick my neck on the line and say that it is. but possibly not. So he will be partnering a horse for the Botty. Yeah, I'm willing to be corrected, basically, because I normally am. He's partnering a horse for the Botties, not Marco. They're cousins, and while they are Italian, they're based in France. Lynchy, am I right?
Yeah, you are right indeed. The Italian racing industry is sadly grinding almost to a halt, so the Botties have repacked and removed and headed to France. And in Amod, they've got an unusual horse because this fellow was moping around in Claimers at the start of last year over shorter, and the distance has made a huge difference to this horse. And considering that he beat the best of British when he came over to Chelmsford on the back of a Kempton win last time, he really is the odd one out in a positive sense. It's his first time on the track. Tactics are probably key in that he is such a strong stayer, but as we mentioned earlier, the surface likely to be riding slower than usual. That will certainly help his cause. He does stand out, but then again, the bookmakers have got him priced as a standout because he's about 5-4 now.
Yeah, so given the fact that he's trading an industry standard 5-4, are you looking elsewhere for a bet in the race, Lynchy?
Yeah, I'd just be happy to play elsewhere. Bearing in mind that there can be a big discrepancy because it's a 2-mile race in the actual finishing time. So in the 5 years we've had of the marathon, there was 11 seconds difference between the fastest run marathon and the slowest run marathon. And that just goes to show the importance of pace and how pace can influence tactics and can ultimately influence the results. And if they go slow, that will ask a new question of Armad as well as bringing others into it. So for that very reason, Lingfield is still a speed favouring track. I'd just be looking at the horses who might be trying this distance, not necessarily for the first time, but new to this distance. Those with a bit of background over shorter and those who pack more of a punch in the finish. And I just look at Sparkplug, a horse who won the Cambridgeshire back in 2016. We've got Verdana Blue involved here. He beat Verdana Blue in a listed race. We all saw A, how speedy she is, and B, how good she is when she won the Scottish Champion Hurdle. And I just think the Sparkplug, if it does turn tactical, then he's going to be really well placed because of that ability to quicken and because of that pace that won him the Cambridgeshire over 9 furlongs a few years ago.
He was really eye-catching over his first attempt at 2 miles last time out as well, as they stretch him out, and Tamarck Wand is a real weapon as well. I'd be very much with you there in terms of Sparkplug. Kevin, for you, is it all about Sunion, or are you looking elsewhere too?
No, I'm going to take a bit of a view on this in terms of the tactics. You watch Ahmad there the last couple of days, and he's missed a kick twice in his last two starts. He's missed a kick and missed it, you know, not half missed it, he's missed it. And he's drawn stall 5 here. He's clearly the one to beat on paper. But look, all there's a very high class of jockey in this race. They'd all be looking at the same form we're looking at. And you then look at, right, what's going to happen on the front end. And you've a few that made the pace, last time at least. Lord George was one in Great Britain, another. But they both disappointed for those tactics. I suspect they might revert back to less forceful tactics. And I would expect Stamford Raffles to make the running from stall 1. He's done so in his last 2 starts and has run very well. But you look at the finishing speeds of those races, and he went very steady. He went as steady as he was able to get away with. And with everyone looking at Ahmad as the one to beat and the fact that he's missed a kick, I reckon they end up going slow here. I reckon Stamford Raffles ends up dictating a steady pace. Ahmad's going to be probably down the inner, having missed the kick with a heap of traffic in front of him. And for all his merits, that'll just be difficult to overcome. And Stamford Raffles isn't my selection. The one I'm going to go for in the hope that he sits just outside Stamford Raffles, sits on his shoulder. There's no kind of prizes for originality here. It's a horse that doesn't have any great secrets, but in the circumstances that are likely to play out, I could see Waters Meet running a massive race again in this race. He's hit the Framan the last 2 times, in not dissimilar circumstances to what I suspect might pan out on Friday. They went very steady last year, and he booted on and just got nailed close home. He bounced back to something like his best form last time. He's got a great record around this course and distance. You'd ideally like him drawn a couple of places to his left. He's drawn 7, but that should be enough. I don't think there's going to be a big rush on for the lead here. And all being well, after about a furlong. He'll be sitting outside Stamford Raffles, cantering along at a very pedestrian pace with poor old Ahmad buried out the back, having missed the kick. And hopefully Watersmeet would make it a bold out bit from the front end.
Well, Watersmeet and Sparkplug, so, are the horses that we're going for against the favourite. Just imagine what that reverse forecast would pay, by the way. Putting it in your mind. As we move on to the second race that we are talking about on the podcast, the third race on the day for Sky Sports Racing, the 2:30, the All-Weather Fillies and Mares Championship Condition Stakes. Island of Life is generally 7-2 favourite. Resma for 5-1, Crossing the Line 11-2. And Castle Hill Cassie 6-1 alongside Heavenly Holly. Ryan Moore, a very eye-catching booking. That's where I would be drawn. Lynchy, for you?
Well, the trends are quite strong for the fillies and mares, to do with the course and to do with the age group as well. So of the five finals we've had for the fillies and mares, four of them have been won by four-year-olds. And that just makes sense, doesn't it? When you get a horse who later maturing, had the three-year-old season and then raised their game at four. So that makes all sorts of sense. More interesting is the tactics involved. So every single winner of the fillies and mares has raced in the first or second wave. And obviously that's 7 furlong track at Lingfield. It's only a furlong or so until the bend. And I think the positioning is key, even more so over this trip than some of the others. So with those trends in mind, Crossing the Line, I mean, that strike rate speaks for itself. 5 wins from a last 7 starts. That tells you of her developing power and her will to win. And it's just a case of a four-year-old who's still up and coming, who's going to race handy, who's in stall 3, who's got a real 7 furlong specialist. And the fact that she handles turning track so well. I mean, look at her all-weather record. She's brilliant around Chester as well. It's just a simple case for me of Crossing the Line ticks the most boxes. And for me, I think that she's going to be well-placed into the straight.
Okay, for David Probert and Andrew Balding, 11-2, the Cape Cross filly. Kevin, for you.
And I find myself with Inchy here, Crossing the Line, for all the reasons I won't repeat them. I don't see piles of pace on paper here. And all being well from her draw, she'll be handily placed. And look, you watch her last time, and you know she's just very likable. She tries. She looks quite straightforward. And look, progressive profile in a race, but they don't all have progressive profiles. And I thought the price was pretty fair, to be honest.
11-2, Crossing the Line. They are both going for her, which means we're all lumping on. We're getting on as quickly as we can. I wonder if there's going to be a final furlong podcast gamble on the day. We'll see. Crossing the Line for the team in the Fillies and Mares Championship. Now we move on to the feature race of the day, at least for final furlong podcast listeners. Because back in 19-dickety-doo, was it in April, Kevin? On that glorious morning in April?
Was it in April? Yeah.
I was thinking, a son of Dark Angel was born. Found his way to Richard Fahin. He's going to win the big sprint of the weekend. We just love George Bowen, and Kevin will be there to cheer him on. Lynchy, catchy, obviously sets the standard here for Tom Dascombe and Richard Kingsgoat. Odds on, though. Encrypted, with Ryan Moore on board again for Hugo Palmer. And then we've got good old Georgie. Where does George rank for you in this? In all seriousness, like, is this... Because Catchy stumbled here last year. He made a mistake here last year. He came up short. What's your thought? I'm very, very keen to take him on, particularly from the wide draw. So, obviously, it's with George.
Well, Richard Fahey's got a phenomenal record in this race, hasn't he? Because he's won it 3 times, and on the other 2 occasions, he was placed. And that's all down to Alban Starr and Kimberella. But obviously, he knows what an all-weather sprinter looks like. And George Bourne's record on the all-weather is striking, isn't it? He's only had 5 runs on the all-weather, and he's won 2 of those, including last time at Kempton. Now, you could say, and Time Form did say, the Kempton just fell perfectly for him because of that strong pace that really teed it up for him. But look at the cast of characters we've got involved in the sprint. Because Catchy's there, and Catchy alone, it's going to be hell for leather from the off. And George Bourne, potentially the setup is similar or the same to Kempton. So that's why you give him a chance. A low draw, a trainer with an excellent record in the race on the back of that Kempton win, and in theory, a race that should set up perfectly for him.
Does this mean, Lynchy, that George Bowen is your selection?
No,
damn it!
He won't catch Catchy. And that's where I'm afraid this beautiful drama turns into a comedy, because Catchy is just, he's too good. Now, here's the thing. You mentioned last year, Emmett. You're right. He fluffed a start. He pressed too soon into the pace in that recovery mid-race, and it still took a Group 1 horse to beat him, because obviously a subsequent event showed City Light was beating a short napper in the Golden Jubilee and should have won that. He was fighting the wrong battle and was just beating a short head. So Catchy has had his win tinkered with prior to this season. He's broken not one but two track records in that time. Stall 8 is the same stall from which he won the Cleve. And I just don't see this horse being beaten. If you try and take Catchy on, it doesn't matter, because he can just sit alongside. And if you let him get to the front and get to the rail, then obviously, as we've seen time and again, he's almost impossible to catch. So this is one of those where simplicity is king for me. He's the best horse. He's the fastest horse. And I think that really he's the poster boy for the all weather, because even though Wissahickon is running today, or Friday, Wissahickon is just a really good horse who's running on the all-weather. Catchy is a really good all-weather horse. In fact, a really unusual all-weather horse. And when you've got that speed and you've got that agility, that's the reason why he's so good. So it's a simple case, lads. I know he's odds on, but I just can't see him being beaten.
Jamie Lynch, unbelievably confident about Catchy. Kevin Blake, are you feeling as though you're going for runner-up spot?
Yeah, in many ways, but... You know, I think I can go and have an old pick a Catchy. I like an old
pick. Do it,
pick,
Kev. Have a go at it.
As the listeners know. look, clearly, at his very best horse in the race. That's nothing new about that. But just in terms of me having wonderful dreams of what might go wrong for Catchy, I've managed to find a couple of little things. And as Lynchy alluded to, as well as on this day last year, you know, his run prior to that, he just missed the kick a little bit and just made things a bit difficult for himself. You know, he can be an absolute bolt from a gun out of the stalls, but not always. Not always. And from stall 8, if he misses it a length or a length and a half or two lengths, it just makes him have to work that extra bit hard. Like, if you're not familiar with Linkfield, let's go and watch last year's race and just see how quickly that bend comes up. And from stall 8, he might just have to do a little bit of work. Ideally, if you wanted to get Catchy beat, you'd love to see a few bunny rabbits in there now with loads of early pace that might be able to capitalize.
You know this horse better than me, but this is one question, big question I had for you. But Alfredo Arcano, from this side looking towards Dundalk, is he fast enough to give Catchy a race through those early furlongs from that inside draw?
The answer is I don't know. He might be. And I spoke to Dave this morning, actually. I'm obviously giving him a big rev up that he has to go forward if he wants to have any chance. And, to be fair, he's not sure himself if he's fast enough. But, you know, they're there to try and win the race. But he said he'd love to be able to make Catchy work to get the lead by pushing forward from the inside. So is he fast enough? I don't know. Look, this is a big step up for Alfredo Arcano, to be fair. From what he's been doing around Dundalk under big weights. So, you know, other than him, it would have been grand if Asvinder was drawn lower, but he's drawn outside Catchy. You know, the hope might be that he might try and pressure from the outside, but I don't know if he's fast enough for that job. So, look, things look fairly right for Catchy by his draw. I suppose one thing, again, just having a pick because I can. He's never raced on a slow all-weather surface. Every time he's raced on it, it's been standard. And he is all speed. And he is a horse that, you know, has got a little bit windy in the very late stages of his races before. But now that he's had his wind tinkered with, funny enough, he might be a little bit stronger at the end of his races. But and that's it. Look, if Catchy gets out and gets an uncontested lead, geez, he'll take some pegging back. But we live in hope. We live in hope. In terms of against him, Alfredo Arcano is really going the right way for Dave, to be fair. Career best last time, but it's a big step up. It's a big step up. You're going from Lily's Prince. I know he was given Lily's Prince. The bones of two stone, but you're going from giving two stone to Lily's Prince to be racing Catchy off level weights. You know, it's a different planet, really. And he'd need another career best to go close here, I think. In terms of Georgie, if Georgie's to be to run up to his mark here. A little bit like the view I took last time. If he hits the gates reasonably well, which he far from doesn't do always, he'd be in a nice position, I'd say, as the race goes, just tracking the pace there. And that would give him a good solid chance of being in the mix. But he needs the start. If he misses a kick from there, it won't be a fun time for him, I'd say. But there'll be no pressure on Georgie now. We'll go and enjoy it, whatever he does. And hopefully he'll run a big one.
Okay, so to sum up, Jamie Lynch is extremely confident that Catchy's going to win. You're not. And are you then fence-sitting in terms of a bet?
I wouldn't mind Encrypted. I wouldn't mind Encrypted. He's going the right way. Excellent record on the all-weather. Zipped around this course and distance last time. Wouldn't mind the surface being a little bit on the slow side, I'd say. And you'd imagine he's been very much trained for this. Couldn't get a better draw, stall one. He looked to track, I'd imagine. And if there's one, like Georgie, he's rated 106, which is the same as Encrypted, but as Georgie, to be fair to him, looked probably as good as ever last time, but Encrypted has the scope and the potential to be, better than 106. So if I had to put up one against Catchy, and I'd nearly be inclined to do it, given the price he is, the race has a decent each way shape to it. So Encrypted would probably be the one for me.
Okay,
that's a good idea though. Just playing the race rather than just playing the horse, in a sense of trying to envisage a way in which Catchy doesn't win, and that simply is by using the petrol at the wrong time, sort of as what happened last year after that sluggish start.
Yeah, three wide, no cover the whole way, wasn't it?
Yeah. So sort of with that in mind again, if they do go fast, and that is the scenario in which Catchy gets beat, then this Stone of Destiny is an interesting outsider. He was fourth in the Commonwealth Cup at 50-1 last summer. And just he hasn't really had a scenario like that since, in the sense of a strong pace where he can settle and where he can get buried. And just struck me that for the first time in a long time, Stone of Destiny might have a strong pace which will allow him to shine much as he did at Royal Ascot last year. So certainly in terms of an each way big swing of the bat, Stone of Destiny makes some appeal.
Interesting. Oh, yeah. All right, so two each way selections in the end, and none of them are George Bowen. Stone of Destiny for Lynchy, Encrypted as an each way scumbag bet for Kevin Blake, for a proper account closer.
Filled.
In the 5-3, but Lynchy is thinking though that Catchy will take all the beating. I can't wait for George Bowen to win. 3:40 Lingfield is the
imagine the
3-year-old all the weather championships condition stakes, again over the 6 furlongs, and the French, who of course we see an awful lot on Sky Sports Racing, are back here again. Belgian Mr. Christophe Soumillon, who you were saying to me off air beforehand, is going to deny all the prize money he gets, Lynchy, to Notre Dame.
Yeah, I don't know if Gerard Mosse is going to do the same, but certainly Christophe Soumillon has said that any prize money he wins this week will go straight to Notre Dame, and that led us into a conversation and a rabbit hole. We're not going to go down there again, but of course, Pizzicato, who is the horse in question, just sprung to life on the all-weather. He's 2 from 2 at Chanty. He won the race last time, the Corinthian Knight won, on his way to winning this in 2018. And he's in that really good habit of just nudging up his rating whenever he comes to the track. So Pizzicato, of course, carries some interest. But you sort of go around in circles with this race. The more interesting horses have got brutal draws, and then you sort of bring tactics into it. So I'm not 100% confident about this. Charming Kid has got stall 12. I mean, do we just think the stall 12 is the end game for Charming Kid? Or if he brings that July stakes form, and if he looked as good in terms of his well-being as much as his form as he did at Dundalk last time, is there any chance that he can overcome that?
What do you think, Mr. Soggy Eggs?
And what do you do? Do you try and go forward and beat the draw? He's been seen to good effect going forward. Or do you just take a pull and see what happens? It's very tricky for them now.
He has been a little bit in and out, but he's definitely got a lot of class. And you know that Richard Fire is going to have him fired up for this day, or at least you would think.
Yeah, fired up and perhaps fired out in the race, and just try and lay it all out there early on from stall 12 and hope that nothing tries to get the lead, and hope that you can rein him back a bit. But again, that's just very easy to say in in theory, but very hard to pull off in practice. I suppose there's a couple of that sort of jumped out at me. James Street is interesting, that you look at that profile and you think, well, he's had his chances in these sort of races against these sort of horses. But again, we're back to the setup of the race. He's rarely been in a double figure field. You get the impression that this is going to work out really well for him. And Deputize is the other one, the William Haggis one. And because it's William Haggis and because it's Good Friday, that in itself means that he is projected forward. You know, the qualification for Lingfield is odd in the sense of you have to run three times, so you get to come in hot, and that's often the way. Or alternatively, if you win one of the qualifiers, you can put your feet up and just prime and ready yourself over time. And because it's William Haggis and he's had that 4 months off, Deputize, he's a dark horse despite having eight races, because only two of the races have come at 6 furlongs, and the way he was ending last season strongly suggests and point to him taking another leap forward this. So just a couple that sort of jumped off the page to me were James Street and Deputize.
Okay.
I agree with that sentiment.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ladies and gentlemen, and it is Sky Sports Racing's finest, Vanessa Ryle. Hello, Vanessa.
Hi, guys. I couldn't have him doing a podcast in the same office as me and not get involved.
Oh, of course not. Of course not. We would have loved to have had you on the whole way through, but it would have been too much of a distraction between yourself and Lynchy. So we agreed that you would just like randomly come in Hurricane Ryle style, as the Blakester said. So you're with James's Street too?
I am, yeah.
Show your work? Reasons why?
Jamie just looked at me and said, "You've never heard of these horses, have you?" I have heard of the horses. I promise. I am the Jamie Lynchpin. That's what we call him, the Lynchpin.
Yes, the Lynchpin of Sky Sports Racing. Yes.
He is Sky Sports Racing senior analyst.
Analyst.
Yes, that's the one. And I'm sure the podcast listeners are getting a full example of why he has that job title.
Gold. Absolute gold. Gold in the sand.
My big excitement for Good Friday is, drum roll please, the catchy Wissahickon double.
Oh,
Jesus Christ.
All aboard. Choo-choo. Guys, I'm not even drunk. I'm at work. I'm actually leaving now. I just came. I'm out of control. I'm giving the phone back to Jamie Lynchpin.
And that is Sky Sports Racing and the Final Furlong Podcast, Vanessa Ryle, with an interesting cameo, to say the least.
Jesus Christ. Like a whirlwind into this little room here. You know what I look like now? I look like Hitler after the bomb plot. My hair is stood up on a brush. My clothes are in tatters, because like a whirlwind with a bottle of vodka in hand, she's just abused and abused the podcast.
Nine!
We're well used to it.
Kevin Blake, James's Street, a good argument put forward for him and for Deputize by Lynchy. Then Ryle came in with her usual stuff. Your thoughts, please, sir.
I like the two favourites.
I like the favourites. I'm going to have Jeeves do multi-account doubles for me.
My view in this race is I'm just kind of thinking and hoping they'll end up going quick in front. You've Quiet Endeavour with a good draw, who often goes forward and now has a set of first-time blinkers on him. And you have a couple drawn out wide that would normally like to go forward in Deep Intrigue and Charming Kid. And I'm just going to take a chance that both riders there will just gun and try and get to the turn in reasonable shape. And if they do, matched up with Quiet Endeavour on the inner, they should end up going an above average pace. And if they do, that will play to the strengths of Concierge, I reckon. If he could reproduce what he did at Newcastle back in October but I hope will be similar circumstances, in that they went very quick up front and he came from quite a way back and ultimately won very well and put up a good figure now, you'd have to say. Earned himself a rating up near 100. He's gone to Doha since and won out there, but then blew out last time. But I won't knock him too much for that. And if they go Rapido up front, which I kind of hope they will, and he could be one that's rattling home from the rear and will hopefully get involved.
Concierge, who Vanessa Ryle is very familiar with. She just drops her bags in the hotel and goes, "Concierge, I'm going straight to the cocktail bar."
You can't say concierge in anything other than a New York accent.
Concierge, man. Hey, where's
I
the
said
course?
New York, not New Delhi. Concierge?
Hey, man, where's the concierge? Come on. I'm walking over here.
Is that Rich Ritchie? Bob Baffert?
Where's That's Rich, man. That's Rich. You know Bob Baffert. I mean, come on, man. Come on. Richie Rich. It's the flat season, baby. It's all about getting back over to my roots. All about the finances, son. You know what we're talking about. Wolf of Wall Street stuff. Now get me that concierge. That's what's kind of going on with Rich Richie right now. I would imagine. I don't know. Do you know what? I think he might win. Yes, sorry. Right. Oh, I've got to.
That's the selection, anyway.
Yeah, that's it's really what concierge.
Just got hijacked. Kevin made a perfectly good case there, and he got absolutely hijacked. And I'm so sorry about that. Doesn't happen with Ed Chamberlain and co, does it?
No, I'm not sorry at all, though. You know what's going to happen? This is going to start affecting Alex, because Alex listens to the podcast, and she's just going to start shouting at you now on Friday, Jamie. She'll be looking at the horse and she'll go, "What do you make of concierge? What do you think, Jamie?"
She gets worse.
poor Alex. Sorry, Alex. Oh dear. Okay.
It's like Mike Yarwood's back. Is that one for the younger listeners? Mike Yarwood. Mike Yarwood was a man, everyone at home, who for about 25 years had two impressions up his sleeve, and yet just kept on coming back year after year. But basically, what I'm saying is that he was an impressionist who wasn't that great at impressions. And I give you, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Emma Kennedy. Come on.
Listen, if that guy worked out a 25-year career, happy days. I will happily follow in his footsteps. Not a problem. We got that. Nicky will be there.
Oh, Jesus.
And that's it. And on we go. So, Wissahickon, according to the second chief analyst of Sky Sports Racing, Vanessa Ryle, this is, and I quote, "a good thing," as she said with her Yorkshire accent.
God.
4-11.
Dear God. What have I walked into here? I used to be a respected man of time for, and I thought I was moving up in the world with Sky Sports Racing senior analyst, which I think was a typo. I think they meant South American race, and it was senior analyst. But because the contract went in, it had to be honoured. And yet here I am, wandered into an absolute maelstrom, and I don't know what's going on exactly. I'm just so thankful that we've only got two races left to talk about.
With that in mind, el señor will say he can be rapido and just be andale, andale, ipa! Too much, señor!
Oh, man.
Does he win, Jamie? Does he win?
Yeah, if he'd have got beat, it would have been in that trial where he ran up behind his stablemate, Courthouse, and Big Country kept him in, and they did their best to get him beat. And he was in a terrible position for Lingfield. He had only a furlong, to extricate himself, switch around, regather momentum, and he did that on the bridle. So he's a very, very unusual horse. He is possibly the best horse to run frequently on the all weather. And he's certainly the most important, because I get the sense that it's only in 3 or 4 months' time that we'll really appreciate Wissahickon, and his all weather work will really be appreciated by everyone, because we've been here before with the classic. The power players normally strut their stuff and flex their muscles. It's a race for the favourites. It's a race for the Winter Derby winners. But no previous classic winner has gone on and almost shone a reflective light on the all-weather by doing it on the turf. But I think that Wissahickon is the one to break that mould, and it's just a very simple case of he's older, he's wiser, he's more mentally tuned in now as well, so he doesn't do silly things like he used to in his younger days, and Dettori can put him anywhere in the race he wants, which probably is needed, because stall 8 of 8 just presents that minor complication for Frankie as to whether to move up early or take back. But because he's got so much pounds to play with, and because he's glided around here in the past, it's just very hard to look past him.
Won the Cambridge back in September. He's been campaigned on the all weather since with a view to this. This is a really nice piece of placing from John Gosden. Like, this is a £200,000 race. This will be some way to kick off the season with him if they can land the odds.
And Lynchy, have you heard? I assume this horse will go to America at some stage, will he?
He's a Tappet, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
Not many Tappets in Europe.
No. Yeah. Joseph had one this year and he was stone useless.
Now, Kevin, they're not all
stone useless. Have been dirt performers, haven't they?
There's very few.
The best Tappets have been on dirt so far. Frosted, people probably remember that big Godolphin horse who was favourite for a World Cup in Dubai one year. But generally, Tappet is seen as a dirt sire. Just wonder, is there any chance of them making this Wissahickon into a stallion? I mean, is that marketable as a son of Tappet who's capable of winning Group 2s and Group 1s if he gets that far?
I think so. He's done it on the turf. He'd be something a bit interesting. If he could go and win a proper group race on the turf, he'd definitely get a job. I'd say. Just for being a little bit different. Sure, Tappet, like, is a 300 grand sire. Like, you know, he's a big deal out in the States. So and Wissahickon, I'd send the mare to him if I could afford him. Geez, you'd absolutely love him just as a racehorse, the way he goes. He's got a beautiful movement and he sticks his head down and you just love him. If you knew nothing about anything, what was what, and you put 100 horses running down the middle of a track, Wissahickon now would be the one that would catch my eye every time just because of the way he goes. And, you know, what he did in the Cambridgeshire last year was really impressive, I thought, because he was never really on the bridle. And he's worked his way into it and gone away and bolted up in the end off a mark of 107. Like, I suspect he's probably going to be a Group 1 horse, given the right circumstances. And, you know, he clearly should win here. The fact that Court House is in there might just make things easier for him, because, like Lynchy says, from stall 8... if Court House wasn't in there, I might look at this and say, oh, geez, Matterhorn might get a very soft lead here on the front end. And Wissahickon might get strung out a bit wide and it might get a bit tricky for him. But with Court House in there, you'd imagine, and of course I could be totally wrong, but you'd imagine, representing the same trainer as Wissahickon, that as he has in the past, he'll go against Wissahickon, he'll go forward and make the run. He didn't do so last time after missing the kick, but I don't think that was the plan. So as long as he hits the gates running here, he'll be making the run and keeping Matterhorn honest. And that should hopefully space out the field sufficiently for Wissahickon to get a slot. And hopefully he'll put up a big performance, because he's looked an absolute weapon, to be fair.
Yeah, he really has.
Kevin, is Court House the Kennedy to your Wissahickon? You know, teammates who hunt in pairs. Really good in his own right, really effective on certain days, but just can't quite match the ongoing trajectory that Wissahickon's got. Is that any sort of simile?
Well, if you're asking me, will he make the running for him? I think he will.
Thanks a bunch, Lynchy. Thanks a bunch.
He's an unusual horse, though, Wissahickon. You know what he reminds me of? He reminds me of like you know, when a Hollywood A-lister goes and does a TV series, and that, I know that's becoming more and more common, but, you know, Colin Farrell, Cillian Murphy.
That is the
It's just unusual
thing,
to see this movie star in like a TV series. And that's the sort of feeling I get with Wissahickon, in the sense of, you know, this is a proper headline act and he's having an extended sequence on the all weather, A, to sort of get his experience and get him attuned for some really big days ahead, you suspect, but also just to educate him and to put all the edges in place so that he can have a big future and a big turf season as well.
Jamie, are you watching Game of Thrones?
I'm not really a Game of Throner.
Oh, for goodness sakes. Season 8, Episode 2, Sunday night, 2 a.m. You have to watch it then. You just have to, because there's too many bloody spoilers. God, what a great show. Right, so we're just saying there's no E-Trail alternative in here for you, Lynch, is there?
No, I wouldn't mess around with E-Trail alternatives.
Yeah, there's no point.
Just do the Wissahickon catchy double.
Thanks, Ryle. Oh, Great to have another cameo.
I'll tell you what here, lads. Because we're running about an hour late, I'm just going to have to leave you here for 3 minutes and run out and bring in the mayor and fall out of a field. I'll be back in 3 minutes.
In that case, then...
Sundown waits for no one.
In that case,
more
then,
more stories
Lindsay.
From Newmarket and Newbury, then.
Yes. So the early days of Blake.
I'll be back in 3 minutes. Enjoy yourselves.
The early days of Blake. Anything else there that you can tell us from the old time form days?
There's not that much to tell, really.
Ah, well, in that
he
case...
He was one that got out early.
In that case, then, he was the one who got out early. Prayers for Dan Barber, please. Dan's terrific, by the way. Can you... So if you're not watching Game of Thrones, which, by the way, I'm disgusted at, because I really think you would like that. I genuinely think you would love Game of Thrones. What are you actually watching?
What am I watching? Line of Duty. I'm a big Line of Duty one.
Yes. Are you up to date?
Yes.
Yeah.
Bang up to date.
I knew. I bloody... No spoilers whatsoever. I knew that guy was going to make a comeback in season 5. I knew he was coming back. We'll leave it at that. As brief a cameo as it was. It's just fabulous. It's so well written. It's so intricate. I love the fact that it goes all the way back to season 1. Like, you really have to have watched each season. If you haven't, you're kind of... You're going to be floating without a paddle to a certain extent, treading water. But it's just fantastic.
Like us now.
Play along, Lynchy. Play along. So with Line of Duty, fantastic show, right? You're watching that. What else? What else is on the Jamie Lynch box set list?
Well, you see, I'm going to disappoint you, but not surprise many people who know my work, because I've got this reputation as something of a geek, which I know is going to astound you and some people. But in fairness, I am a bit of a Star Wars kind of guy. And I'll tell you something else. You are bang wrong with your misinterpretation of The Last Jedi. You didn't like it, did you?
Oh, I hated it. I hated it. It's everything that's wrong with that bloody director, Rian Johnson. Rian Johnson had an entire script. He had an entire setup that was all played there by J.J. Abrams. And he went, no, I'm not using this. I'm going off and doing my own thing because I'm Rian Johnson. And I've been told I've got full carte blanche. So I'm going to rip up the romance between Rey and let's not mention too many names. I'm going to completely throw that out. And I'm going to blow up the relationship as well between Kylo Ren and Rey too. Oh yeah, by the way, you got no parents. They were nobodies. What the hell? J.J. Abrams has to come back in and mop up that hurricane of piss that he left behind and clean it up so that it's actually a good film in December. Jesus Christ. Yeah, I didn't like it.
I knew we'd find something to light you up. Who knew it would turn out to be Rian Johnson?
Oh, he's terrible. I just hate him. I really dislike him.
You think
him.
He overthought it?
I think he thought, great, I've got a contract that says I've got carte blanche because I made Looper.
Yeah.
Which is not even that good. It's got one great scene in it, and that's it. And that's the cafe scene between Bruce Willis and... your man
Hastings.
It's Hastings, yeah. Hastings between him and H, and that's it.
How was your tea, fella?
But geez, mother of God. I don't like him. I just don't like him as a director. And look, some people, because I spoke about that on Twitter, and a lot of people were like, "Whoa, how dare you speak so badly about the film?" But Disney to take the action that they've taken for. Like, you're not going to have J.J. Abrams just suddenly parachute back in to go and course correct unless they go, all right. Because there was a different director who was going to do episode 9, and J.J. is parachuted back in. So I just hated what he did with it. I hated what he did with, like, you've got this opportunity to bring back another iconic character, and he brings him back, and he's completely alien to the character that we knew in the first 3 films. It's none of it made any sense. It just was completely all over the place. Hated it. You liked it then. So what was the reason why you liked it?
No, it was just I was happy with his take on it because it was like natural character development, wasn't it? I just quite liked that idea of growing old rather than growing up, that was a big thing, and the passing of the knowledge and the baton to the new generations. I just sort of, yeah, I did very much go with it, but you have to go with it. It didn't land with some people. I completely get that. But have you seen the trailer for episode 9? Did you see that was released last week?
I haven't. So I'm one of these people who tends to stay away from trailers.
Preview shows.
preview shows, different story. So for example, right, Game of Thrones is coming back. So like, I didn't watch any of the trailers for Game of Thrones season 8, right? Didn't watch any of them. We're heading into episode 2. But what I did was, once episode 1 had landed and I'd watched it, there was a lot of comparisons that I was able to put there. So this was to the date of when the pilot first aired of Game of Thrones. They went right back.
You're talking about Game of Thrones.
Oh, we've had
Jesus Christ. I haven't said a word since you left.
We've had a big rant.
Not a phoneme, sir. Not a syllable. Yeah. And it's been Game of Thrones for the last 3 minutes, 48 seconds, because I've timed it and I've recorded it.
All he had to do was say Star Wars Episode 8, and I just flipped my lid. Lost it completely.
I
know which buttons to press.
3 minutes.
Say again?
I wasn't too bad with my estimate of 3 minutes.
Yeah, so. You were pretty accurate, to be fair.
Lynchy, you see, we have a game with Kennedy. If Kennedy says 10 minutes...
Oh, it's like half an hour.
I'll put a spread on it. 10 minutes now would definitely be 20. And yeah. 25 or 30. Yeah, you think I'm joking? I'm not joking.
But you were pleasantly surprised.
The other day, we had a 2 minutes... with poor old Rixie waiting on the line. I set the spread at 8 minutes. It came in at 10, so it wasn't too bad. But yeah, that's what I deal with now.
You were pleasantly surprised, though, because I called you at bang on 6 today. It just worked out that, unfortunately, due to errors in Sky Sports Racing, we'll blame Vanessa Ryle, the guest held us up. But that's all Vanessa Ryle's fault entirely. I will just say that we're on to Lucky Last. If you watch episode 1 of Game of Thrones, season 1, and you watch episode 1, season 8, the comparisons and the familiarities, it's all so well done, and it all comes full circle. So watch it. Right, speaking of great films, Kaiser Soze.
My will to live has just left the room. I'm just going to go and catch it up. I'm sorry.
Sky Sports Racing's Jimmy Lynch there.
As soon as I step
Yeah, exactly,
out.
Yeah. Not movie times, not film.
Speaking of Sky Atlantic's big show, ooh. Game of Thrones, which continues. Kaiser Soze.
We're all cross-branding.
Yes.
Producer D has just arrived in with a bun for me. This is nice.
Wait, now, is it a bun or an Easter egg?
What's that?
What are we doing here? So Kaiser Soze heads the betting at 4-1. He's been well backed.
On the podcast or life in general?
Who knows at this stage. Jamie Lynch, for you, is Kaiser Soze the right favourite for the lucky last of 4:45 on All Weather Championship Day?
No, not for me. He's an atypical Linkfield horse, even though he's won twice here, because he sits out the back and he burrows his way through in the straight. Now, he's done that twice, and he's done that really impressively, but it's going to be much harder to pull off those tactics, which he seemingly needs against this better collection of horses on this bigger and better day. So the tactics that have served him well, surprisingly so, are going to be much harder for Kaiser Soze in this spot. I really like one here. I really like the French Arriviste Indico.
Ooh.
Yeah, the thing about Ahmad in the marathon is that distance made the difference to him. The all-weather has made a huge difference to Indico. I was looking at his time form figures since he stepped on to the artificial surfaces. He's gone from 86 to 110, and he's still getting better. And his last run, Ashanti, he split Bayonne and Graphite. And I'm pretty sure that if either of those were qualified, they would be clear favourite, not just favourite, but clear favourite for this. So he's got the exact right skill set. He's got a good draw, and he is up and coming, which you don't often get because obviously the terms and conditions of these races and the qualification, you don't get many up and comers, but Indico is exactly that. So he was probably my strongest bet on the whole card, Indico.
Ooh, I'm liking it. 13-2 at least you can get about Indico, the Rio de la Plata. So Indico is the main play it sounds like. We're going out and going out big in the lucky last with Jamie Lynch. So, Kevin Blake, are you going to endorse this selection or take him on?
I'm still not fully decided on this race now. I was kind of working on it by the time we got to the start of the podcast. But what I had drawn at this stage was that I think the gallop is going to be good here. I think we have a few solid candidates to go forward here from low enough draws. And I could see Indico slotting in behind them. So I could see the race working out for him. He's definitely on the short list. And he's probably there with a horse called Documenting. I think those are the two I have it down to at the minute. And the thought with Documenting is he's never run. Sorry, that's a lie. He has run over a mile, but not for an awful long time. He's primarily been seen over 6 and 7 since he's moved to Kevin Frost. And his level of form is good enough, I think. The trip is just a question mark. But given, well, in the hope that this race goes the way I think it will, in that they go a right gallop, I think that'll very much help him get the trip, because he can be quite free going. And if he's going to get the mile, he needs just to set a little bit, and a real strong pace would help him get that. He's drawn one, so he'll be buried there in behind the leaders. And I could see him running very well. So it's down to those two. I need to hammer it down. I need to watch some more Indico videos hot off the presses from France. And I'll have a decision made a little bit later.
Okay. So completely sitting on the fence, which means, Jamie, we are going with you.
Well, I have it down to two.
Going with you, Jamie, and Indico. 13-2 is the best price currently available at the French Raider. Kevin, what's your best bet on the day?
Ooh, you caught me on the hop.
Come on. What was the chances I would ask you that?
It's always so unexpected. go to Lynchy first, and I'll have it for you then.
Well, Lynchy's going to go with Indico. So, Lynchy, what's your next best?
Oh, Jesus.
Do you have a next best, Lynchy?
This has unraveled spectacularly in the last 15 minutes. It was actually going quite professionally. And then Kevin fucked off somewhere. You started talking about Game of Thrones for 10 minutes. And Kevin seemed surprised that he's being asked what he fancies on the day.
Yeah. Shocked. It's the preview.
This is a regular. The last point is actually quite a surprisingly regular theme.
Yeah.
Kevin,
what's your best bet? Oh, for Cheltenham day one. Jesus.
I tell you what Kevin likes, and I do agree with him about the setup, is Concierge. No, that is a really interesting one. It's true. It is an interesting one.
Yeah, like I'm kind of like fishy mostly, kind of slightly bigger prices, but you know, none of them are really leaping at me. Right, if you just because it's such a filthy bet that it's probably the most likely one to yield a profit of some sort. It's probably encrypted in the sprint final.
All right. Pure scumbag each way. Neil Channing, get
account
your band.
Closer.
Account
oh, yes.
Closer. Make sure it's your friends who are placing this bet for you and not actually you.
Disgusting thievery. You have to
each way scumbag, you probably don't have friends.
Well, that's true.
That's thievery of the highest order. If you go into a betting shop to place that, or even if you're online, you have to wear a mask.
Oh, yeah.
As you are either clicking OK or you're at the counter. You have to wear a mask.
You got to go around like Balaclava Man. Boom! And on that bombshell, we're done. Thank you very, very much for tuning in. Hopefully you liked it, and a very happy Easter to all of you. Lynchy, happy Easter, my friend. Hopefully it'll be a great one for you.
And remember, when you think of Easter, you think of eggs. And the next time you are asked how you would like your egg, there is one answer and one answer only. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is runny.
Are you sure he didn't make that up? I don't recall that happening.
Oh, there's no. That's becoming a sweeper, my friend. I'm telling you, that's becoming a sweep. Somebody,
please. How many years ago was that, Lynchy? What year was that? Was that 2007?
That was 2015.
Would that sound right? It was either 7 or 7.
Does sound right. Yeah, I think it was 7.
What was the Abdullah horse that won the was it twice over? Won the Greenham? Does that sound right? No.
Oh God, I have to think about that.
There was a big Abdullah horse that won. That won the Greenham, I think. So let me just double check this. That'd be a great call if
welcome
I got that
back
right.
To Nostalgia Hour here on the Final Forum podcast.
Oh, there we go, Lynchy. Twice over, beat Ravens pass in the Craven.
Whoa.
Oh, that was a Craven. That's when Cravens were Cravens, wasn't it?
That was a proper race.
Yeah, there we go. 2008. Oh, Lord, time flies.
Do you happen to remember the great Alistair Down interviewing Aidan O'Brien on Channel 4 Racing, Guinea's Day, Kev? Do you remember? Or were you there? Maybe you were there. So I don't know. I have no idea what had gotten into Alistair Down, but there was something irking him with Aidan. I don't know what it was, but something was just... There was a bee in his bonnet, right, for some strange reason. And O'Brien had Henry the Navigator running in the Guineas, and there would have been...
Get to the point.
Was it Dawn Approach? Dawn Approach, yeah. Dawn Approach was... Or New Approach. New Approach is running in the Guineas for Jim Bulger. That's what it was. And he interviewed him beforehand in the most patronising way. And it wasn't long after he'd written that article where Aidan had 8 horses declared for the Derby. And he said, you know, Aidan O'Brien would probably be better off going back to the days of just looking at Istabrak in his stable cam. As he ended an article like that. It's a real scathing indictment of Aidan O'Brien. And he interviews him. He says, well, you know, and it's grand for you to be here, really, in the Guineas with no pressure on your back. You know, you don't have to be talking about the winner. And then he had to go and interview him about winning the Guineas with Henry the Navigator, which was just priceless, which Aidan, of course, does with great grace and dignity and, you know, conducts himself quite well. But he was like, you know, it's nice to be here, you know, kind of like a day off for you, really, isn't it? It's just a day at the races.
Hold on now, Lynchy, here's one for you now. Later that day at Newmarket, there was a 10 furlong, 3-year-old only handicap. What a result this was now. Bronze Cannon off a mark of 84 beat Dr. Fremantle off a mark of 84.
That's when Newmarket handicaps, when Stouty and Gosden are looking at each other, not blinking in the market, both thinking, both knowing they've got group horses of 85. Good lads.
Bronze Cannon ends up rated, what, Jesus Christ, 100 and what? 110, 12, 4?
Yeah.
120.
Yeah, and the Fremantle ran in.
The Fremantle was up around there as well.
Definitely was.
84. Oh, Jesus.
You'd be.
They backed Dr. Fremantle into 11 to 8. They probably thought they were buying it. And Gosden, rolling a big dice. 8 to 1. Boom.
Johnny G.
Well, no, he wasn't rolling the big dice here, to be fair. He's running. And
yeah, yeah, but you wouldn't know though. It might have been like a telephone Barney Curley box job off course. Who knows?
Oh man!
And that is Jamie Lynch's debut on the Final Furlong podcast. You didn't know what you're in for, and there you go, my friend. From me, Courthouse, to the Wissahickon of the show, Kevin Blake. Best of luck with Georgie Bowen, Kev.
Cheers. And Midnight Oasis is about to pop, so George might have a little brother or sister by the time he runs on Friday, all being well.
Oh, fantastic. Excellent news. Hopefully that horse will make at least 1.1 million at the sales.
Yeah, by Star Spangled Banner, so you never know.
Hey, it could happen. Big amount of money paid for a Star Spangled Banner today as we're recording. Right, that's it. Jamie Lynch, thanks so much. You can see Jamie and Alex Hammond and all the Sky Sports Racing crew in every single race on Good Friday from All Weather Championships Day at Lingfield on Sky Sports Racing in glorious HD. Miss it, watch it back a little bit later on. Jamie, thanks so much for joining us. Kevin, I'll chat to you on Tuesday when we return to review all the weekend's racing. And yeah, thanks very much. Balaclava Man, Sunday night, Line of Duty. Talk to you then. God bless. Bye-bye.
Have you downloaded the free At The Races app yet? With easy-to-use race cards and form, expert daily tips, plus video replays and in-app betting, it's the app that no racing fan's phone should be without. Available for free on your iPhone or Android mobile, visit attheraces.com/app for more details.